Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Bale going alone and scoring for Tottenham!
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run! He scored! And he's away, Aaron Lennon! Crouch! Yes!
Welcome back. It's another edition of the internet's newest, maybe not, but definitely most dangerous Tottenham podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I am your host, Skipjack, and we have an all-star Mega Powers panel with you today. As always, I am joined by my sidekick, the writer formerly known as Lennon's Eyebrow, Ben. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad that Lennon's Eyebrow guy is gone. That guy was a dick.
R.I.P. Rest in peace. We have, moderating our comments on the podcast today and keeping us in line, we have Uncle Menno. Menno, how's it hanging?
Hey, going pretty good. Thanks for having me.
And leading the podcast in words per opportunity, we have our stats expert, Michael Cayley. Michael, how's New York treating you?
Good.
See? That's what I'm talking about. Efficiency in the space allotted to him. So let's start off. We have something extraordinary to talk about today. I think that this past Sunday's victory against QPR, that 4-0 result, might be the most positive result Spurs have had since Gareth Bale left the club. There was no qualifications about how good a game that was. There was no chance that it was going to keep AVB or Sherwood at this club. And everything actually worked. It wasn't we just kept getting lucky. That was a great game. Michael, how good a game was it?
It was fantastic. It was, every time we won the ball back, which was always, immediately they were looking for that quick pass forward. Where is the chance to break forward vertically and attack a defense that isn't fully set? It felt like everything that we had been told that AVB's system would be, and it was tons of fun.
It was great. Before I move on from you, Michael, sometimes the eye test gives you a different sort of view than maybe what the underlying stats say about the game. Do the stats back up what a dominant performance that sort of looked like?
Oh, absolutely. Current expected goals formula has us averaging, expected goals around, I think, 2.5 to 3. Usually when you score 4, it's you haven't. There's some good finishing going on there, and certainly Dyer's header was a really low expectation opportunity that he turned in with a perfect shot. But QPR produced basically nothing, just that one Matty Phillips chance up until garbage time. We just dominated them in chances in any number you want.
Yeah, I thought it was an impressive total performance. I mean, when you can count the other team's chances on one hand, and they really weren't even that great.
They had a bunch in garbage time, but
yeah. Well, I was referring to before that. Yeah, but yeah. You're right. Ben, did you think that was an impressive performance by Spurs? I'm curious, how much of that was Spurs? How much of that was QPR being really bad?
Well, I think it's a bit of both. I mean, I think you can't take away the fact that QPR is one of the worst teams in the league and are probably getting relegated.
Before you go further, I agree with that. And I just want to put on the record, I called that, or at least that was my prediction before the season started. A lot of people were placing QPR as high as 11th in their totals. I mean, do you think people just missed how bad they were? I mean, they looked awful.
Yeah, well, I kind of expect this year to be much like last year, where there's probably about 10 teams who could go down, depending on how things break. Bad teams stayed up last year, like Sunderland, who admittedly, turned it around in the last stretch. But, I think QPR, if they can put it together, they have money, they have quality players. It's possible that they can be less bad than a West Brom or a, Burnley and Leicester and, whoever else, West Ham, who knows, Crystal Palace now are probably in free fall without Tony Pulis. So it's possible that QPR is still not quite bad enough to go down, but I mean, they'll probably go down. But that said, I mean, Burnley is also a favorite for the drop. And, you know, Chelsea kind of struggled before they finally put them away 3-1. And Chelsea is probably much better than we are and has a ton of, you know, sparkling attacking talent. And they didn't look as good against Burnley as we did against QPR. So, you know, I think, yes, QPR is terrible, but we also put in the kind of commanding, dominant performance that a really good side will do when faced with a bad team. I mean, we played bad teams most of the time last season without ever looking this convincing. I mean, I don't think we've looked this convincing against anybody probably since the 5-0 against Newcastle in Redknapps last season.
Well, there was the 4-0 versus Newcastle last year, but I think this was even more dominant than that. I think what was sort of struck me the most about this game was just the performances of some of the players that I don't think you necessarily expected to stand out quite the way they did. I mean, Lamella, maybe we should have expected it. I don't know, but he really stood out. I was impressed by the way he was taking on guys, fighting off challenges. I mean, just running into space. I think when he was assisting the third goal, I believe, the way he let the ball run before he took it up was, I think Lamella was probably pressing a little bit given what happened last year. I thought that was a sign of confidence that I might not have thought Lamella would have at this point. It was really good. Dustin, who do you think was the most impressive performance in this game?
Well, I think there were two, really. First of all, I do want to say that watching this game, which I did on tape delay a little bit late, I thought to myself after the game was over that this must be what it must feel like to be a Bayern Munich fan. everything was going well. The football was fantastic. And, you know, we crushed our opponent. I mean, it was amazing. And I'm just not used to feeling that. So I'm a little conflicted because I'm not used to having nice things. That said, I really thought there were two standout performances, and one of them was Lamella, who I thought looked he was worth every penny of the $30 million that we paid for him if he plays like that the rest of the season. Just really good movement. He was taking on players, not just making good passes, but taking players on and getting past them, getting in the dangerous position, setting up his teammates. You know, had that beautiful chip in for Chadley's second goal. Just a really, really strong all-around performance. And honestly, I thought Chadley also was the other standout player in this match, which came as a real surprise because we hadn't even seen him at all in the preseason. This was his first appearance for Spurs, and he looked really, really good. You know, there were some illuminating quotes, I thought, that he had in an article. I don't remember which paper it was in, but it was posted on the site.
It was The Guardian.
It was The Guardian.
How he's talking about how him and Addy's job are to out-tall the opposition.
Yeah, but it was also – there were some really interesting tactical details, I thought, especially that he said when the fullbacks are pushing up high, my job's to get in the box because I'm tall and I'm a good target. And he showed that ability, really, because he was able to get free. Now, admittedly, QPR's defense was terrible. I mean, just awful.
Yeah, at the back thing didn't work out too well for Harry.
So, I mean, he found himself very well open, but when he got his opportunities, he took them brilliantly. And I was really impressed with how he did. And if he is able to replicate that kind of performance against better opposition, then, I mean, I think he's playing his way into the team.
To go back to Lamella real quick. I agree with your assessment that both of those guys looked great. But one of the really standout features of Lamella's game, in addition to his excellent creativity and willingness to take people on, etc., was he looked so tenacious. I mean, he was pressing high up the pitch constantly and harrying people out of possession. I mean, he forced so many turnovers. And when you are as creative as Lamella and you can win the ball that high up the pitch, you're going to create really good opportunities for the team. And I think that's really important to the way Pochettino wants the team to play is, you know, to win the ball and transition quickly. And if he can do both of those things in one person, he looks like the perfect guy for this setup.
Well, I felt like in the first 30 minutes, like half our moves were coming off us taking the ball off midfielders from QPR in the, like, not too far outside the final third. It was we were sort of talking about how that we didn't see a lot of pressing against West Ham. Well, we saw it on Sunday. There was a lot of pressing going on in that game. I mean, just pulling the ball off of them. I think the other guy I think who deserves some recognition is Dyer, who is scored again, joint lead scorer in the league, you know, on pace for 38 goals. You know, 20 years old, second game in England, scored again. No problems out of him for the entire game. At no point was I thinking, like, what the hell is he doing? Especially considering he's playing at right back. I thought that was really impressive for such a young defender. Just that guy looks like a quality pickup. I'm not sure if he's ready to be our first choice guy. And we'll get to that a little bit in the transfer section. But I'm super impressed with Dyer, if only for his free scoring ability. Michael, is there anyone else who stood out for you?
Well, I think that going along with the Lamella point, that sort of the way in which our midfield harried them, you know, it was the one area where QPR's talent is really pretty solid is in midfield. And I thought that Kapu and Benteleb as a pairing they just controlled the game. You know, Benteleb was so – it was his verticality, his passing that got us that started off the first – move for the first goal. And at the same time, Kapu was just everywhere. I think something like he completed over 100 passes. You know, he was just always just circulating the ball, stopping attacks. I think our central midfield was fantastic.
Let's talk a little bit about Benteleb, because I don't – you know, obviously he was getting a lot of, I think, unnecessary grief last year for being Sherwood's pet and all the starts he was getting. But I think he was being played out of position last year, and I think he's matured since he was at the World Cup. And now that we had a game where we didn't get anyone sent off in the 20th minute, we were really sort of able to get an idea of how Sherwood wants to use him. Ben, what did you think of Benteleb's performance?
Do you mean how Pochettino wants to use him?
Yeah, sorry.
You said Sherwood.
I'm sorry.
That's alarming, Greg.
I'm having
Don't bring
flashbacks.
Us back there.
What if he is Sherwood under a Pochettino mask?
No.
See, a smarter podcast would edit that out, but here at Wheeler Dealer Radio, we have just not enough respect for you that I won't bother doing that. Ben.
We make it into comedy.
Exactly. Ben, what do you think of how Harry Redknapp used Benteleb on Sunday?
I don't think we have the technical know-how to fix it even if we wanted to, let's be honest. I think this may be wrong, but I think this is the first time we've seen Benteleb play next to a defensive midfielder instead of as a defensive midfielder,
sure feels
barring the
way.
First 20 or 30 minutes against West Ham. And the difference was staggering. I mean, with Kapu there to mop up behind him, you know, he was able to drive the ball forward with much greater effect and, you know, didn't leave holes that, you know, our defense, to put our defense under pressure on the counterattack. Kapu and Benteleb look like a perfect marriage. And even though Benteleb is only 19, I really don't see anybody else in our squad who fits into that role as well as he does.
No, he looks
which
really
is awesome.
Good.
Go
and I also think that you really can't underestimate the effect that playing, basically playing almost every match in the World Cup had in his development. I really wonder if that was one of the things that really kind of kicked him on and got him ready to play a major role for Spurs this year. Because, I mean, he took his moments. He looked a little bit out of his depth when he first started playing under Sherwood. And then, you know, he made the Algeria squad. And, you know, I watched him several times in the World Cup, and he looked really good in the World Cup, playing in less of a defensive role, kind of more in the role that he's playing now under Pochettino. You know, now he seems like he's taken that form and that experience and really carried it over into the Premier League season. I think it's fantastic. You know, if you were going to ask me which one of our youth players was going to crack the first team, it wouldn't have been Nabil Benteleb. But I'm so glad that he's emerging right now.
Well, you know, it's nice to know something good came out of the Sherwood regime. Maybe it's as simple as he's not playing for Tim Sherwood and Pochettino uses him properly. It could be that simple. And not that he grew at the World Cup, although I'm sure that helped in his development.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really can't be overstated how important it is for him to not be the most defensive player in midfield. I mean, you know, he's competent in the tackle and he can press and chase and do those things, but I mean, he's not that guy, and using him as that guy is just a waste of his abilities. So giving him license to do what he is good at, you know, of course he's going to look better.
So before we get off Bentaleb, just focusing on our midfield for a minute, we've been heavily linked with Schneiderlin throughout the window. I mean, we're linked with Schneiderlin because he's Pochettino's guy. If we'd hired DeBoer, let's say, and we'd been linked with Schneiderlin, I think we'd all look at it as sort of an excess signing or a sign that Capu was on his way out. Let's assume for the sake of argument, Sandro's gone, we buy Schneiderlin, so we have Capu, Bentaleb, and Schneiderlin. What does the back of that midfield look like to you guys? Michael?
Well, I mean, I think that given the sad, but I think fact, that Sandro is not in Pochettino's plans, that leaves us with kind of an interesting question, which is that, as Ben was saying, Bentaleb looked fantastic playing next to Capu. I think that we could see possibly in a more attacking setup, someone like Holtby next to Capu. I think we could see we've seen what happens when you make Dembele the most defensive midfielder in a double pivot. He's not good there. And so the problem is Etienne Capu is excellent, but he's also not that durable, and he can't play, you know, 180 minutes a week. So we need someone else in that kind of role, and I think that Schneiderlin gives you both. He can be Capu's backup, and he could conceivably play a more passing role with Capu. I think he makes sense in that way. I can see why they'd be after him. The problem, obviously, is the cost and how much it's going to cost to sort of push Southampton out of their prideful rejection. But I see the case.
It'll be interesting. I'm not sure if we're getting him, but I think at least I feel much more solid about our midfield than I did against West Ham. Having seen how they behaved against QPR.
I think Michael makes an important point, though, because if we get Schneiderlin, we could see Schneiderlin Bentaleb, Schneiderlin Capu, or Capu Bentaleb, and we really wouldn't see a drop in quality in any of those midfields. So you can always be rotating guys in and out and, you know, not suffer. And that's huge. And without Sandro and without Schneiderlin, we could be in a lot of trouble,
especially if we're taking a tilt at the Europa League this year.
Absolutely. I mean, Milos Velikovic is probably the only guy we have who could play that Capu role who's not Capu right now.
Another recommendation for Milos.
Yeah, and that's I mean Bentaleb's young and he's done well, and Harry Kane's young and he's done well, and I think Milos could do well too. But it's Dyer's young. You want to have some more experience in your team. Not to say you never win anything with kids and that bullshit, but you don't want to be relying on exclusively young players to carry the team in such an important position.
Speaking of which, I forgot to bring this up when we talked about Dyer, but I don't want to let it pass without saying, and I just want to see if this is my own anti-other fan paranoia or if you guys agree with me here. If Dyer had done what he had done for Spurs, or signed with another team, I think, like if he'd signed for Liverpool, United, Arsenal, I think the hype on this kid would be off the charts. I think it would make Wilshire look like the hype that was around Wilshire a few years ago look like a championship player. I think we'd be hearing about the next England center back. I think he'd be getting call-ups. I think it would be so obscene we'd all hate this kid already. But I think it's kind of nice, actually, that at Spurs, the reaction to him has been kind of, like, level-headed. Like, we're super thrilled about it, but we're all pretty realistic about, like, yeah, he's probably not ready to be first choice, but, man, he's looking really good and a lot better than we thought. Dustin, do you agree? Do you think the hype on him would be out of control on a different team?
Well, I think absolutely. But I think the hype, at least that I've seen, the hype around Dyer has been probably a little bit higher than I think what you're intimating here at this time, especially after this past weekend against the QPR match. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys watched Match of the Day after the West Ham game where Ruud Gullit pretty much totally ignored Eric Dyer completely and then went on a 10-minute screed against Lamella. And I think it was Adebayor, but just pretty much ignored him. And they came back then the next night on Match of the Day too, and really talked and really talked him up and said how what a good job he was doing. But the second match, I thought they really focused a lot on Dyer. The hype probably isn't as much as maybe if he had been, you know, like Adnan Yanusai. I'm totally butchered his last name. Yanusai?
Yanusai, yeah.
Yeah. Who, when he came on the scene for United, like the hype was out of control. And it's scaled back a little bit since then. Frankly, I'm okay with him not getting that level of hype because I don't think it would serve him well. I agree with a lot of what you're saying, Greg. And just in that we need to make sure that, yeah, he's had a couple of good games, but now we need to step back and make sure that he has the time to fully develop before we really turn on the hype hose here.
I'm going to disappoint both of you and say that I'm going to say
Are you
that
going to turn off the hype hose, Ben?
No, I'm cracking it all the way up. I think Eric Dyer is getting called up in the next set of England games deadline.
I think he will, but I think that's more strategic than.
Well, I'm not sure he should though yet. That's the thing. I mean, I want to be cautious here because he may not deserve it, but only because if I don't know.
Yeah,
we have to make sure
it's really beneficial for anybody. But I just think we're understating what the limelight looks like for Dyer. I think he's going to be in the spotlight pretty quickly, especially if we play well against Liverpool this weekend, which we'll talk about later. But and he looks good again. There's no question that Dyer will be called up and talked up.
I mean, Dyer will get called up, but that's more of a strategic. My guess is they'll try to lock him in, like kind of what Germany did for Holpe. We're not going to use him right away, but let's just get him locked in so we don't have to worry about it.
Well, but is he eligible to play for Portugal?
Yes.
I mean,
So he's only played youth international, so he could still declare for Portugal if he wanted. Now, he's played at every level for England, so I don't think that's likely, but he could play for Portugal if he wanted because he lived there since he was 8, so. On this smooth transition, we saw Adebayor for the second week in a row getting a league start.
Can I take it back 1 second before you move on?
Sure.
I just think there's one other player who had an outstanding game who we haven't talked about and hasn't really gotten talked about a lot. But Jan Vertonghen, after last
Jan
season
Vertonghen,
where he was kind of shaky. Yeah. Jan Vertonghen. he was, you know, he was petulant and, you know, hashtag body language and all that shit about, and I was definitely sour on Vertonghen last year as well. I'm not saying I'm not guilty of this. But he was, I thought, unbelievable against West Ham or against QPR this weekend. He was absolutely everywhere, defensively and transitioning to attack. It was just nice to see the old Vertonghen back.
Yeah, and it looks like I thought when Barcelona got slapped with that, like, for real transfer ban, like when they found out, yeah, that's actually going to happen, I thought for sure because I thought they'd buy for next year too, and I thought for sure they go after Jan. But we haven't heard a peep. I mean, he hasn't signed a contract with us yet, but we haven't heard a thing about that. And, you know, if we can make it through the window without that happening, then I'm feeling pretty good about that. It was nice to have Jan back. Hopefully he sticks around for a while. We'll get to sort of the future of our defensive line later. I do want to transition from defense to attack quickly, like we do under Pochettino.
Boom, nailed it.
Nailed it. Done and dusted, mates. I want to talk about our striker situation. We saw Adebayor get his second consecutive start in the league. He got most of the minutes in that game. I believe Soldado came on for garbage time. Harry Kane was up there too, wasn't he? Am I misremembering that, or?
Yeah, Harry Kane came on as the left wing Chadley forward guy.
So I don't think Harry and Roberto. I mean, Roberto actually had a nice little move in the upper third when he was doing a throw in that almost got a goal for us. But I don't think they really had much of a chance to impress themselves on the game, particularly Soldado, given how late he came on. But Adebayor, I thought, had a kind of a nice game actually. I thought he was making a nuisance of himself. He had an assist on Chadley's first goal. He had a really, I think an underrated finish on his goal, the fourth goal of the match, because I think that kind of stuff gets saved all the time. But he just, you know, he hit that right away and just buried it in the back of the net. I thought he had a nice game. I would still like to see Soldado get a league start. But I think we can assume that Adebayor is going to be starting against Liverpool, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
What do you...
I mean, there's no reason to change it.
Yeah, I mean, no one's given us any reason. I mean, Dustin, what do you think is the future of Tottenham's striker position this season?
I mean, I always kind of went into the season thinking that we'd have a rotation at striker depending on matchups and our opponents. I was a little surprised when Adebayor got the start against West Ham, only because we had seen so many good things from Roberto Soldado in the preseason that I really expected him to be our starting striker, at least at the beginning of the season. But, you know, you can't argue against what Adi has done. Whether or not you think that Adebayor is our third-best striker or not, you can't argue with the results. He's had two games and two pretty good games, and as long as he keeps playing well, you know, making a nuisance of himself, as you said, dropping deep and linking up play and basically doing well, I see no reason not to let him continue to start.
Michael, what do you think of Adebayor right now? Because it seems like the stuff he does well doesn't really show up in, like, you know, sort of statistics. Because it seems like Soldado does a lot of very intelligent things, like nice passes, runs off the ball, good movement, pulling people out of position. But we haven't seen enough of him to say that his finishing has deserted him this year, although there was that miss against AEL last week, but he did plant one much nicer later in the game. What do you think of Soldado right now and what his place in the team is?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, Adebayor had a couple of, you know, had a couple of nice key passes. He twice, you know, got in the middle, ran that central channel on a counterattack and got big chance opportunities, missed one, hit one. You know, that's quite solid statistically. I think that Soldado last year certainly did a slightly better job of getting into scoring positions and a much better job of creating for other players in terms of his expected assists. So, I'd like to see them both in there. I think one of the key things, though, with this striker question, I think, is that Mauricio Pochettino's tactics they're kind of two striker tactics. Jay Rodriguez scored all those goals for Southampton, not sort of shockingly as a winger, but because he was kind of a second striker. Nasser Chadli was getting in those sorts of positions. I think that Harry Kane is now seen as the kind of guy who can get in those sorts of positions. So I think that Pochettino is going to find ways to fit two strikers into his formation. I don't think we'll see this against Liverpool. You might want to go somewhere more defensive, but I think that there's going to be a lot of minutes for these strikers.
Let's bounce off of that a little bit away from striker. I want to talk about Chadli a little bit. I know we've addressed him a little bit again. Do we think he's played his way back into the team on the back of that one game? I don't want to get carried away, but watching him, and admittedly against a really bad QPR playing a defense that really wasn't a good idea for them, he looked really good, and it just made me think, like, we don't necessarily need a world beater on left wing, and the way that Pochettino is playing with the wing backs getting up high and Chadli talking about getting in the middle, Ben, do you think he's the answer?
You know, I think it's premature to say he's the answer, but I definitely think he's shown a capability to fill the role the way that Pochettino envisions it.
Let me rephrase though before you continue. Do you think he has enough potential or has shown us enough that we should not buy a left winger in this window? Or a left forward?
You know, I mean, again, it depends on who's available. I think if Depay was, you know, still an option, I think that's a kind of no-brainer buy. But, you know, right now, if it's like buy Danny Welbeck for $15 million or stick with Chadli and Harry Kane out there and Lennon and Townsend, I don't know that, I mean, that's enough of an upgrade to say, yeah, we should quit on what this Chadli promise might be.
I would and this might be irrational because I know there's a lot of people who are like Welbeck, but if that's the choice, Welbeck or Chadley, I'll take Chadley all day.
See, I mean, I like Welbeck. I think he could be very good in that role. I mean, he's a striker. I mean, let me take it back to how Southampton and Jay Rodriguez operated, because I think that's really kind of the model for what Pochettino's looking for. Jay Rodriguez is a striker who was playing as like a left forward. And, you know, he's played there a lot over his career and, you know, he's competent there. But his what he wants to do is get in the box and score goals. And not like Gareth Bale or a wide forward who wants to cut inside, dribble a few guys and rip one from like the edge of the box. He wants to like float into the box, in the 6-yard box, and take shots from there. And so we saw Chadley able to do that, you know, on the break and in possession, move into those central positions from the wide areas. And so Danny Welbeck is basically that exact same guy. He's a striker first and foremost who's shown that he can play on the wing and still get into good goal-scoring positions. And so I think he's kind of exactly the model of player that Pochettino would want. Now, he's also – he and Jay Rodriguez, before knee injury, are both a lot faster than Chadley. I think if Chadley has one weakness in filling that role is he doesn't have the top speed to really, you know, jet past the last line of defense and latch on to through balls the way that those guys do. And that might be a problem for him. I think Aaron Lennon can do that and showed in preseason a willingness to do that. But obviously we know Aaron Lennon in front of goal is less than ideal, to put it mildly. So I don't know. I think Chadley is good, but I think he's an imperfect solution. But unless something obvious comes up, I think it's worth giving him more chances.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of stupid situation we're in with so many of these guys. I know we banged this drum before on this podcast, but we haven't had a real manager in arguably 2 years, maybe longer. And even if you did like AVB the first year he was here, we were so screwed up last year with the way the whole season went. It's just, we didn't have a time to like properly evaluate a lot of the guys who came in last year. And I think Chadley's chief among them. Like, he wasn't getting played for whatever reason. I don't know if that was his own creation or not, but you know, I think it's he's almost like a new signing in that regard. In that we saw so little from him last year. But you know, hopefully what we saw against QPR and Benfica is more what we can get from him than, you know, every other time we've seen him. I mean, this was a pretty comprehensive victory for Spurs. Michael, going forward from this game, is there what is your big takeaway from this match?
Well, I think that, you know, we covered the Chadley piece. I mean, the guy scored two goals. He's part. He should be part of the team. I think that the thing that I've been thinking about going forward is just how good – I'm repeating myself – how good we looked in central midfield. To put two stats on that I wanted to get to, one of them is that Etienne Capoue showed a lot more passing range than I had expected from him. Not only did he complete, you know, again, over 100 passes, he actually completed 14 of 20 long passes. I think those are passes over 20 yards in length. So he wasn't just involved in the short passing game. He was involved in the build-up. And likewise, Eric Lamella, I think, supporting those guys in midfield, another stat I wanted to get to, was he had 20 ground duels. That means 20 times he challenged for the ball, either trying to get through someone or trying to stop someone. He's successful 50% of the time, which is not great, but that gets at that combativeness. No one else on the team had over 11. So these are guys getting involved, doing more things than we expect of them. And, you know, I think that the power of our team in central midfield is the best thing we've got right going for us right now.
Well, Capoue's been a revelation so far. I mean, it looks like Pochettino really is the sort of the dickhead whisperer. by all accounts, he's always been kind of a pain in the butt. And, I mean, he got really close to engineering a move to Napoli last year? But almost got out. And I think his agent was complaining about Spurs, but you know, God bless that, because he's making Schneiderlin and even Sandro, to some extent, look surplus to requirements right now. It's only been two games. I don't want to get carried away. But given how composed he was when we went down a man last week, admittedly to West Ham, and how composed he looked this week, it looks like a huge leap forward. And if this is anything that what we're gonna see moving forward, I think it's, you know, it's very, very promising for Spurs.
You know, it's funny you say that.
Ben, go ahead.
Ben. Yep. Oh, I was just gonna say real quick. You know, I know it's only been two games, but Kapu is one of the only people who I'm not like, well, it's only been two games. I think this is Kapu. And I think this is what Kapu was in France. Kapu has always been, you know, strong on the ball, good long-range passes on the ground. That's his game. And I see no reason to doubt that this is the Kapu we're going to see all season.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that, you know, we've been talking on the pod here for about 45 minutes, and I think it's to our team's credit that we've gone this long. We haven't even mentioned Christian Eriksen. I think that's how good we played in this past game, where Eriksen, I thought, played well, and we really haven't talked about him because there were others who were doing so much better. So, I mean, just the takeaway from this game is, you know, I think it's clear we're going to win the league.
Good call, Dustin. Good call. way to manage expectations. I think it's funny because I think Eriksen might be the most negative thing. Well, Kabul and the fact that he can't run anymore is probably the most negative thing about the game. But Eriksen wasn't like the sort of super involved player we saw last year. Now, that's not to say he was bad. I thought he looked fine. But this is the big problem we're facing. I mean, God, after the last 2 years, like, I'll take that.
Well, I don't think Eriksen's had to be that kind of a player, where he's had to kind of interject himself and put the team on his back in order to make things happen. He's got pieces around him now that are good fits, and they're playing well, so he doesn't have to, you know, make the magic happen, as it were, as often. And, you know, that may mean that he disappears to some extent in a couple of matches, but as long as there are other players who are willing to pick up that slack, I'm perfectly okay with that.
So I have two thoughts about that. Like, on the one hand, you're right. I mean, last year, everything good we did had to run through Eriksen, or just nothing good was going to happen. And this year, it looks like clearly Lamela is the centerpiece to our attack. You know, everything that we're going to do going forward is probably going to run through him. And I think, you know, Eriksen and Lamela in preseason, Eriksen has now taken more of a backseat role. I thought he actually looked really good in his interplay with Lamela and in taking a backseat role and still contributing to the attack without being the guy, which is something that I think he struggled with throughout preseason and against West Ham. He finally seemed to show that he had an understanding with how to play off of Lamela and let Lamela shine without taking over the game. But that said, I think the next step now for Eriksen is, even if he's not going to be the centerpiece of our attack, he needs to find a way to make that magic happen when he is, you know, the guy with the ball in a good position.
Considering how much he adjusted last year, I would hope that'll happen. Maybe not to the extent we would all like it to happen, but, you know, I think, you know, it's promising. God, it's so – I mean, this season has been so – we're three games in if you want to count the Europa League. I don't want to get carried away. But it already just feels so much less stressful than the last 2 years have. Like, you know, waiting for the attack to click, then Bale being a one-man show and not wanting to admit that, and then nothing going right last year. I mean, it's been just so much more relaxing to see this. We have a game plan. We have an interchanging front line. They're moving around and shifting. I mean, I've never seen Spurs run anything that complex. It's incredible to watch. This is so great, you guys. This is so great. I'm really enjoying
this. It's all
going to
come crumbling down.
Probably, but yeah. My point is,
we beat a really terrible team, but still.
But it's not that. It's that it just looks like, because when we were really successful under Harry, it just felt like we put a bunch of really good players out on the field. It was like, go take it to them. I mean, it feels like we have a game plan now, which is so comforting to
watch. I think that's the biggest takeaway, especially after the West Ham debacle, which was very disjointed and, you know, red cardy and all that shit. We had a plan, and we finally got a look at what Pochettino's vision is, and it's really nice, and I hope it keeps working.
Is it nice? So, we gave Harry Redknapp a warm
My wife.
There we go. There we go. We gave Harry Redknapp a warm welcome back to White Hart Lane on Sunday, and I think we all enjoyed that. But today we've been a fond, today being Tuesday, we've been a fond farewell to, I don't think a Spurs legend, but a cult hero at White Hart Lane. Michael Dawson got sold to Hull City for £6 million, if the price is to be believed. And it sounds like we cut them a deal so Dawson would get a higher salary or a longer contract, one or the other. I mean, first of all, Daniel Levy is a wizard at selling players. Like, how he got $6 million for Dawson is completely insane, as much as I love Dawson. But before we get into Daniel Levy or the economics of the deal, I think we should take this time to really commemorate Michael Dawson. He's been off the pace the last few years, but the guy has shown loyalty to our club. He's worked hard for us. I don't think you could ask more of a player than we've gotten from Michael Dawson. He is a bit simplistic. He has holes in his game, and honestly, he's not good enough anymore. But I think we will all appreciate what sort of Michael Dawson brought to Spurs. I think we all, a lot of other players will get linked to Spurs sort of rise from a mid-table to lower-table team to a team near the top of the English tier. But I think maybe there's only one or two players who had more to do with that than Michael Dawson. And maybe only Ledley King. Aaron Lennon. I mean, you know, it's arguable. But I think Dawson, I don't think Dawson gets the credit he deserves for the role he played in sort of elevating the level at which Spurs played. I just want to spend a few minutes sort of remembering Michael Dawson before he passes away into the veil at Hull City.
Our farm upstate.
Yeah, exactly. before he goes to Avalon in stripes. Let's start with you, Michael. What is your favorite memory of Michael Dawson?
Oh, well, I was all prepared to go like fourth. I mean, I think that
We can come back to you if you need to. If you need to examine the menu.
Like, I got a thing when I go fourth.
Okay. All right. Let's start with you, Dustin. What is your favorite memory of Michael Dawson?
Well, there's a couple, but I think that what I'm going to go with is there was a game in 2006 against Chelsea where Michael Dawson had his Jermaine Genus line up for a free kick. We were down 1-0 to Chelsea at White Hart Lane. And Genus put in this beautiful free kick right to Dawson's head, who just flicked it, this beautiful goal right in the back of the net. It was a fantastic goal, and he just went nuts. And it was just one of those quintessential, although rare, Michael Dawson-headed goals that just showed you just what really how much playing for Spurs really meant to him. You know, he did that fantastic little kind of leapy hand punchy goal celebration that he loves to do that he does when he's excited. It was a wonderful goal, and it was a great memory. And as much as I agree that Dawson, it was his time to go. I love the guy, and I will miss him.
I hope when he retires, he comes back to the lane in some capacity. Speaking of goal celebrations, there's a great, I think it was in 09. I don't remember what the actual goal was, but Dawson scored off a set piece. And he has this great celebration where he sort of shrugs his shoulders.
The shrug!
He makes this, like, who, me face? And it's not like when, like, let's say Hazard does it and just looks like a dickhead. It's like Dawson just looks, it's like the most charming, like, who, me? I'm just a defender. It's this great celebration. I think I've got two favorite Dawson moments aside from that. I saw Tottenham the year we were in the Champions League. I saw Tottenham play West Ham at White Hart Lane. It was a 0-0 draw, but Dawson hit the crossbar in that game off a set piece. And you could see how frustrated he was after, like, you know, he got that close to a goal. And I thought that was cool that I was able to see that, although a goal would have been nicer. But the thing that I'll remember about Dawson, there's a great picture on the internet. You can find this. It's from our tie against AC Milan in the Champions League. And Seedorf is standing in the foreground with his back to the camera, so you can tell it's Seedorf. And Dawson's, like, telling him off. Like, he's pointing his finger at him and, like, not yelling, but sternly talking to Clarence Seedorf. And there's something about, like, plucky Michael Dawson telling Clarence Seedorf what's what that I just find very Michael Dawson, very charming, and very appropriate. And when I think of Michael Dawson, I'll think of him telling Clarence Seedorf what's up as Tottenham Hotspur knocks 7-time European Cup winning AC Milan out of the Champions League. Ben, what's your big Michael Dawson memory?
Well, Dustin stole mine. So
typical
that was,
Midwesterner.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like I'm a Liverpudlian hubcap.
Or a Liverpool target, and Dustin's a Spurs scout.
So
get your own scout.
But yeah, that goal. So that was Michael Dawson's first goal for the club, which was a big deal. And it was against Chelsea, and we won. And it was the first time we'd beaten Chelsea in a long fucking time. But for me, there was a personal connection with that moment because that was the season I started following Spurs. I'd started watching, you know, the Premier League that season, and Spurs were a team that I liked a lot, and were like thinking about picking a team, but I hadn't committed to following anybody. I was just watching every game I could watch. But that was the game where I started off the game like, I'm rooting for Spurs because fuck Chelsea. And by the end of that game, I was like, oh, I'm a Spurs fan. Like, just, I didn't even think about it. It was just by the time that game ended, it was, oh, this is my team. And of course it's my team. And, I, you know, I haven't looked back for the past 8 years. And Michael Dawson played a large part of that. I guess since I've already said it, but I'll pick a different moment. The Man City game in 2009, 2010, when we secured Champions League, Michael Dawson was a monster. And I think really that whole campaign, if you look at it, that's the 1 year in our history we've qualified for the Champions League.
Well,
it's a year.
2 years
that,
we qualified for the Champions League.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
The 1 year we actually qualified for the Champions League, it's the year that we saw Gareth Bale start to turn into the monster that is now Gareth Bale. We had Luka Modric, you know, at the peak of his powers. We qualified for the Champions League, and the player of the year for Spurs that year was Michael Dawson. And I think that's incredibly telling. I mean, you know, he was a guy who, yes, he has suffered, you know, in his old age, but when he was on, he was fucking awesome, and he just threw his body in front of everything. He bled for the club.
I'm gonna hate saying this because I'm going to draw – Michael will enjoy this, but no one else will, including myself. Dawson's the kind of player, like, if you watch baseball, he's like Kevin Millar for the Red Sox. He doesn't have the flashiest numbers, but if you're a fan of that team, you love him in a way that no other fans are going to be able to appreciate. Like, they'll have their own players they feel that way about. But, like, other teams' fans are going to bag on Michael Dawson, but they'll just never understand why Spurs fans love him the way we do. Because of what he meant to us, and some of that's intangible and just like what we're projecting onto it, but a lot of it's just how he played for us and the fact that he was a guy who wasn't maybe the most talented person in the world, but for at least a few years was able to really elevate his game and really help Spurs out. Michael, what's your Dawes memory?
Yeah, so I wanted to let other people sort of nail the, you know, when Dawson was at his peak, he was not just this team sort of in his soul, but he could carry this team defensively when we needed it. The thing that I wanted to add to that is I think that his season in the end, AVB's first season, when Dawson was when Dawson, it looked like he was going to be sold. And then he fought his way back into the club toward the middle of the season. I remember him. I think it was, against West Brom. Just like sort of getting into that game, getting a bunch of tackles in, holding the defense together. And it's like, oh right, this guy's still good. This guy's still got. This guy fought for 3 months for a position that he wasn't going to be given. And now he's going to be the core of, you know, we fell short that season. There were many problems with that season. It wasn't all that fun at a whole bunch of times. But Dawson kept that team together when we thought he was done. And it's too bad. I think he is done at this level now, but he had an extra year or two or three in him that we didn't see coming. And I think that's a wonderful thing to achieve as a player, to keep going at the high level that no one thought you could achieve in the first place.
And there's something to be said for Dawson. I'm sure he would have gotten on disgusting wages at QPR. I'll bet he would have gotten a raise at QPR. And I think it's credit to him that he chose to fight for his place here. We too often, I think, you know, we slag players off for not being loyal enough. But maybe when a guy's, you know, declining a little bit like Dawson was, we yell at them too much for the other things. And, like, Dawson, I think, deserves some loyalty from Spurs fans as much as he's just not up to it anymore. And that's a shame, but he's not. But I think, you know, Dawson will always have a place at this club. I think he's going to get a really warm reception at Hull when Hull comes. I hope the other center back is responsible for all the goals they let up against us in that game that we will hopefully score.
Well, they'll have two other center backs, so you can spread the blame around.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. God. Is Louis Van Gaal going to get hired by Hull before we play them? Is that what's going to happen?
No, Steve Bruce actually rocks a confident back three.
Oh yeah, Steve Bruce is going to get hired by Manchester United. He's the one who can run a working back three.
There we go. Like I was saying earlier, does anyone have anything else about Dawes? I don't want to short shrift our sort of tribute to, I don't know about a legend, but certainly a cult hero.
I also like to imagine, so Matt Smith, the 11th Doctor of Doctor Who, was once a football player at Nottingham Forest and a center back before injuries ruined his career and he became an actor. And Michael Dawson also started at Nottingham Forest. So I like to think that they played together and Michael Dawson has a little bit of time in the TARDIS in him.
At Gallifrey FC. Good. Now that all of our British listeners realize we're gigantic nerds, I was talking about the fee. We got £6 million for Michael Dawson, which is, as much as I love Michael Dawson, he ain't worth £6 million anymore. So good job, Levy, because what this means is we are essentially paying £2 million for Fazio. Am I getting that right, guys? Fazio? Ben, how do you say that? I don't know. You're the one who watches more football than the rest of us.
Yeah, we'll go with Fazio.
Fazio. Whatever. Fazio. So we got Fazio from Sevilla, who is their starting center back last year as they went to win the Europa League, which, despite what some idiots on Twitter are saying, is a real competition. I think it's obviously not our first choice if you're going in after Musacchio, but third-party deals screwed that up. I know some people are accusing us of being cheap. I think it's just we don't want to get caught holding the bag on deadline day, and that deal looks really tricky. So we went for the next best thing, and I think that ends up being Fazio. Ben, I think you've probably seen more of him than the rest of us here. What do you think of Fazio? Because I think it's safe to say that unless he's hurt or Eric Dier just scores 5 goals next week, Fazio will eventually be our starting center back alongside Vertonghen. What do you think of him?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Dier, if he keeps playing well, can keep Fazio out of the team. I don't think that's beyond the realm of possibility. But that said, you know, there's been a lot of talk about him being the Argentine Michael Dawson because he's slow.
People who've never seen him play, by the way.
Right. Well, and he is slow. But I think if you're going to compare him to somebody, you should call him the Argentine Per Mertesacker. Which, yes, we don't want to have to compare our players to Arsenal players, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. But he's gigantic. He's 6'5". Which I guess is still a shade shorter than Mertesacker. But he also, like Mertesacker, reads the game very well. He distributes the ball very well. He's a very intelligent player, you know, even though you wouldn't think it to look at such a big dude because people have weird judgments like that. He's slow, and he's slow on the turn, and, you know, he very well can get caught out. That's not a thing that won't happen. But he positions himself well and knows where to be well, that I don't think it's, you know, going to be the same problem we have with Dawson or even Kabul. I mean, we saw with Kabul, you know, against QPR where he got caught out on a ball over the top and Matty Phillips outran him into the box. because Kabul still plays like he's fast as shit. You know, he hasn't really, his game hasn't really adjusted to the fact that injuries have robbed him of a step. You know, we saw the same thing with Adebayor, his first season under AVB, where he was trying to be faster than he realized that he wasn't anymore because of injury. Fazio knows that he's slow, you know, and so he's going to position himself accordingly. He is not going to try and win a foot race, and you know, with, I don't know who someone, Raheem Sterling this weekend. He's going to stand off of him enough that he can make the interception or tackle or wherever he needs to be. So I think he's a good buy. I think, you know, if he replaces Dawson and Kabul, he upgrades our defense automatically. He may not be the first
presence we don't have right now.
Yeah, and we definitely saw that against both QPR and West Ham, where we struggled in the air and we struggled against physical players. He will give us a physicality that we've been lacking. So he's definitely a nice option.
Especially when we play Diego Costa and he punches him in the ribs again.
That's right. Somebody should take that motherfucker down.
If you haven't seen that, when Sevilla played at Leti last year, there's a vine of him just straight up punching Diego Costa in the ribs when the ref isn't looking. So that should be fun. Michael, do you have any thoughts on Fazio?
I mean, I think that in Fazio we have a player who looks like a capable starting center back, at least against a whole bunch of Premier League sides. And right now, especially with Kirikesh's situation apparently up in the air, we really need quality starting center backs. And so I don't have a lot to add. There isn't, statistically, center backs are kind of impossible. If you want to know how good a center back is, don't ask someone who does stats. Ask someone who's watched him play a lot. And I've watched Fazio play very little. So I hope he's good.
Well, I think that sums up probably what most Spurs fans' opinion on him is. We hope he's good. I think it's certainly a decent buy, especially with the Dawes sale.
I will say, I looked at sort of Spanish Twitter, you know, look at like the Marca and AS reports on his leaving. And all the responses from people were kind of amazed that he was going so cheaply.
Sevilla seems pretty pissed about it, too, which is a good sign.
You know, there's a lot of, really, Matthew went to Barcelona for $20 million and we're letting Fazio go for $8 million? That's absurd, which I think is a good sign.
Yeah, so that's comforting. I want to move on to, we got two more fixtures before we get to some questions coming up. We'll do the first one really quickly. We're playing our Cypriot friends from AEL Limoncello. I can't remember how it's pronounced. AEL, we're playing them on Thursday at White Hart Lane. We're coming in with a 2-1 advantage from our trip down there. We didn't look too good in that game, and then we brought on Eric Lamela and we just started running it. Lamela had a nice assist to Soldado, who had a pretty great goal, actually. And we have another guest on the podcast too.
That is Dandy. Welcome, Dandy. She would like to say she is not excited about having a Europa League game right before a big clash against Liverpool.
Well, thank you, Dandy. We appreciate that insight. Lamela really ran it. I think we need to take this at least semi-seriously, because I think AEL against us and Zenit has looked a lot better than people gave him credit for, just because they were a Cypriot side. Do you guys have any thoughts on this game coming up? I think we should probably win it.
Well, I think, I mean, the danger fixture is past, and that was the away match, which we got that over with first. And quite honestly, based upon, you know, my talking with Michael and a few others, that really kind of, you know, the stats showed that this was probably a better team than what most people gave it credit for. Anytime you go to a place like Cyprus or Eastern Europe and you play an away game, I think the expectation should not necessarily be for, a crushing win. And so I would have been happy with, you know, a draw at Limassol. And so for us to come back and win 2-1 in the opening leg, I think is really good. So, I mean, we now have an aggregate lead going into the home match. We have two away goals scored. I feel pretty confident that we probably won't
lose this match and we can conceivably play a mixture of rotated sides and or kids without too much trouble.
Honestly, I think the thing we might learn the most from this match is whether or not Holpe's on his way out or not, based on whether or not he plays. But yeah, I mean, hopefully we'll qualify. Hopefully it'll be on TV anywhere.
It won't be.
They're advertising it on BN, which it doesn't count for much, but here's hoping. But more importantly, we're playing Liverpool on Sunday. That is a big fixture. I think Spurs and Liverpool are both teams in big transition periods right now for different reasons, obviously. This is a huge match. I'm feeling better about it than I was a week or so ago, but I don't like
it. Which terrifies me.
Yeah, I don't like feeling good about Spurs games. It's uncomfortable, and it usually doesn't end well. Michael, how do you see us going into this game? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm completely a mess. I think that, you know, before the season started, I would have looked at the schedule and said, we get 6 points from these three games. That is fantastic. You know, it is a home game against Liverpool, but, you know.
We all saw how the last one went.
We all saw, exactly. And they, and Liverpool, I think, have, you know, yes, they lost 3-1 to Manchester United, but that was at the Etihad and Manchester City. That was at the Etihad, and they really played pretty well. City created only one or two chances in the danger zone. What happened to Liverpool was that Jovetic and especially Aguero are incredible finishers.
But correct me if I'm wrong. Liverpool, part of their problem is they weren't creating good chances for themselves, and it wasn't entirely down to City's defense. I mean, obviously somewhat down to it, but they just weren't. I mean, they were doing well with the ball, but they just weren't creating those chances. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. I mean, you know, it's a combination. You know, trying to. I mean, it wasn't entirely down to City's defense, but trying to get through a midfield two of Yaya, Toure, and Fernando is not tremendously easy at the same time. But yes, Liverpool don't look like the kind of crazy high-powered attack that they were last year. They look vulnerable. They look like they can't completely dominate teams. But at the same time, they held their own with Manchester City, apart from a couple of great finishes. So I don't want to. I'm trying to keep myself from expecting too much from this match. At the same time, I feel like they match up very well with them, especially in center midfield, where they have a lot of weaknesses and where they don't have. You know, last year they were able to paper over those weaknesses by having Suarez. And by having Sterling and Sturridge being good enough in supporting roles that there was nothing anyone could do trying to control central midfield. I don't think that Liverpool are so strong now that a team that can boss them in central midfield like we should be able to do with Kapu and Benteleb or Kapu and Dembele. I like our chances when I look at these rosters, and that scares me, and I'm trying to talk myself out of it.
I guess what makes me most nervous is our defense. That's still kind of a makeshift back line. I'm assuming we're going to play Dyer at right back just because, dear God, let's not play Naughton against Liverpool. But Rose against,
I don't know. Do you feel worse about playing Naughton against Liverpool or Kabul against Liverpool?
Exactly. I guess I feel worse about Naughton just because I've seen Kabul be a good player at some point in his career.
That's a little harsh, I think. I mean,
my point is, the Naughton horse show
was on the left, though, not on the right.
Yeah, I know. But my point is, Naughton hasn't gotten a lot of time in the team this year. I don't know. I mean, that's why our back line gives me pause. Now, I think what Michael said is well taken. That, I mean, I really like what Kapu, Dembele could really do to that Liverpool midfield, especially if Steven Gerrard has another day at the office.
I honestly think Lamella could run Gerrard off the pitch.
Please.
Frankly, with his... No, I mean, just Gerrard is going to be the deepest player in that midfield. You know, he's not mobile. He's not quick.
That could get ugly. Yeah, that's a great point.
And Lamella has shown that he is willing to press from the front really heavily. And so I really think that's one of our strongest matchups on the field is Lamella against Gerrard. I think he can push him around.
I feel like Liverpool are a bad – if they lose to us, and I'm not saying they will, but I'm just saying if Liverpool loses to us this weekend, I think they're going to be in narrative hell for at least a little bit. the same hell we were in last year, where everything's about, you know, oh, they spent all this money, and God only knows what's going to happen to them now because these players aren't performing, and what's going to happen, and the pressure's going to be on them. And it'll be interesting to see how they cope with that, especially with a Champions League campaign to deal with. Dustin, you think that's going to be a problem for Liverpool going in? Do you think they're going to be feeling the pressure going into Sunday?
Well, I certainly hope so. Good call. We've had to live through this, this period of, the media just completely calling all of our signings that we made last year bums and flops and that kind of thing. And, you know, it's not completely undeserved because we were pretty bad last year. And so were a lot of the players that we signed. I would be more angry actually if the media gives Liverpool a pass, in the same set of circumstances than I would be if they actually did come and kind of rip them a new one, if results don't kind of go their way. I think in both situations, it's not completely fair because new players need a lot of time to settle. There's been a huge amount of turnover, et cetera, et cetera. That said, it's interesting that, our biggest fears are defense, because I think that should probably also be Liverpool's biggest fear, because their defense, I don't think, has looked particularly good either in the matches that I've seen them play. Lovren hasn't looked very good at all.
They have another problem. At least we've had most of our guys all preseason. Like, Liverpool, I get that there's no great solution for them there, but starting Moreno against City just felt like suicide. And I don't think he had a bad game. I think he's going to be pretty good for Liverpool, honestly. I think he's one of the lower-risk signings they got. But, boy, I think potentially we could take advantage of that on Sunday, given he's so new to the team.
Yeah, I just remember that Liverpool's Achilles heel, if they had one last year, was that their defense was not very good. And so that's why, when they got in the Champions League and they have Champions League money, my biggest fear was that they were going to go out and just sign some rock-solid defenders, keep a hold of Suarez, and then they were going to be nigh unstoppable. And really, the defenders that they've signed they've mostly just kind of, raided Southampton. And it's almost as though they sold Suarez, but have replaced them with mostly role players and backup to kind of fill out the squad, and really haven't made a serious punch in terms of a splashy signing that's going to improve them defensively.
Lovren might. I mean, he might not, but he might.
Well, he hasn't looked very convincing, and he could develop into that kind of a player. Sure. I mean, it's too early really to say, but based on what we've seen, I have not been very impressed with Lovren. Now, the one signing that Liverpool has made this summer that I think it is the big splashy signing that could be a catalyst for some serious change on their part, but it could also be a whole bag full of lols, is Mario Balotelli. And seeing as how he's probably in line to start against us.
You really think he's going to start against us? You don't think he's going to be a sub?
He could. Unlikely, but
Roger started Mourinho against City with less notice than that, so I guess you're right. I just think with Sturridge, he'd be insane to start Balotelli. I don't know. Maybe not insane.
They'd both start.
I would just save him as a
The difference between Moreno and Balotelli is they didn't have anybody else. Flanagan's hurt. Mankio isn't good. So Moreno is really their best option to play that game. The other choice is playing Mankiela right back, which isn't good. And then that would mean Glenn Johnson at left back, which is probably worse. So didn't really have a choice. Liverpool have had problems, but mostly they have a functional attack with Coutinho, Sterling, and Sturridge. That's a unit that's played together. They don't have the same need to disrupt that just to bring in a body. I don't know. I think Balotelli is going to start on the bench, and then I think he's going to come on and score a hat trick.
Harlock, I think that's dead on.
I think Balotelli will destroy their season, but I think he's still going to beat us this weekend.
Well, Balotelli's going to have those moments of genius that cause everyone to overlook the times when he's either A, non-existent, or B, actively bad. Kind of like Steven Gerrard, actually. But I think it's what perplexes me about this is because we haven't seen Spurs play a halfway decent opponent yet this year. I just don't know how much we're going to take it to Liverpool. And that's yeah. I don't know what to predict about this game because I think honestly I think it's going to come down to whose back line makes the most dumb mistakes.
Well, there's two. I think there's two tactical bits, for lack of an intelligent word.
Things.
Yeah, that could be important. One is on. You know, if we put out the same lineup as last week. They're going to have Glenn Johnson and Raheem Sterling on their right side, who are both very fast and very capable in attack, against Chadli, who will stay high up the pitch if he's playing how he did last week, and Danny Rose, who's quick, but, you know, we've all seen his defensive frailties. So on the one hand, do we need to do something to protect that side? Because if goals are coming from Liverpool, that's where they're going to come from, I would guess. And then the other thing is we saw against City that Moreno-Lovren partnership is laughably bad right now. You know, I think they both looked bad independently of each other, but they looked really bad in conjunction.
I sort of agree with you, but I also think our attack's not as potent or as rehearsed as City's.
No, I know. I think that's
so
fair.
They might have made them look worse than they are, is all I'm saying.
Either way, is I think that is the obvious weak point in Liverpool's defense is that gap between those two players and that lack of relationship because they're new together. So we haven't really played with like a strong attacking right wing forward so far. Is that worth tinkering with to get somebody running at those spaces? And then conversely, is it worth tinkering with to protect our own left flank from Sterling?
Jesus,
or
that's
do we,
Sterling
or do we just ride or
me.
Die with what we did put out last week?
I think we're riding or die. Barring injury, I think we ride or die. Davies, I think. I mean, Rose has been starting in the league. I see no reason to change that unless there's some matchup concern here that I'm unaware of. But Rose has been starting for a reason in the league and honestly hasn't looked that bad. But he's so attacking that against Sterling, that worries me. That said, you know, if Chadli wants to play defensively, I think he can give Sterling some of the business. But that's just me basing that on the assumption that he's a big dude and could knock him around a little bit. I'm not basing that off of anything else. God, this game makes me really scared because Liverpool's looking much more beatable than the last time we played them.
Well, that can't be good.
Well, I think what's terrifying to me is with the way United's playing, by the way, LOL, with the way they're playing with their back open three doors, and the way Liverpool has looked very ordinary so far, and the way the Arsenal's looked very ordinary so far, I was kind of writing off a top four finish this year. And then, I don't know, like, it's maybe not as crazy as it might have seemed before the season started. Not to get too excited, but I kind of don't want to get carried away, but God, that would be so nice. I want to be Liverpool. I want to beat Liverpool so bad, you guys. I'm sick of what they did to us last year. I'm sick of the narrative that surrounded them. Although the Schadenfreude that surrounded them blowing the title last year renewed my hope in English soccer fans. So here's hoping we can contribute to their downfall this year.
Michael, wait, is there anything that you would want to do tactically, lineup wise, to you know compensate for Liverpool's strengths and weaknesses, or do you go with the same lineup that kicked QPR's ass?
The thing I was thinking about when it just this sort of your discussion sparked us a little bit was that the way that Manchester City attacked Liverpool's back line was really it's basically a 4-4-2 that they play, and they've got those two strikers that could both run at those channels, and Jovetic was so dangerous in that right-hand channel. And the thing is, with our lineup, the thing that they didn't really do was I guess I'm now saying central midfield for the 80th time in this podcast, but they didn't really challenge them down the center. They didn't really challenge the weaknesses in Liverpool's midfield. And I think that with our much more 4-2-3-1 kind of setup, it's really Lamella supported by Capu and probably Bentaleb, maybe Dembele, who are the keys to us controlling this game. And given that, I would probably tend toward wanting someone like a Lennon, who offers a little bit more defensively in that three-man midfield and that three-man attacking band, and then expect that we come at them through the center, taking on Gerrard. But
Lennon would offer a certain defensive solidity, and he would also keep that entire side of the field honest with his work rate. That's a fair shake. God, I'm going to be so nervous for this game. I'm glad it's early over here, so I don't have time to drink before it. Or at least time to drink that much.
I'll be drinking.
But there are limits to how early I'll get up to drink. So getting away from things that make us gut-wrenchingly nervous into things that make us actively dumber, let's answer some viewer or listener questions.
We want to do score predictions?
No, we do those on the site. We don't want to rob Mechanic of the only content he provides us.
Hey, he put in a good shout for Eric Dyer for team captain.
Good point. That's a good point. He did contribute to that. And he was really enjoying the MK Dons game in the writer's room today, so there is that. So let's start with this very deep question. I think it really shows how tactically nuanced our readership is with this. This is from Rap Game Harry Kane. Starting with the premise that Fazio is Fozzie Bear, how would you cast the rest of the Spurs roster as Muppets? I think this starts from a flawed premise. I think Kyle Walker is Fozzie Bear because he's playing bad jokes on the team in the Spurs TV videos. So I think Kyle Walker is Fozzie Bear. Ben, you were very gung-ho.
Kyle Walker, Walker, Walker.
There we go. There we go.
Boom.
Listen to the stat guy. Busted out the jokes. All right.
Man.
So we got Kyle Walker, Walker, Walker.
From Walker Flock of Flame to Kyle Walker, Walker, Walker.
This is going to be a fun year for Kyle Walker on this podcast, even if he doesn't get a start. It's going to be a banner year for Kyle Walker in the world of wordplay. Ben, you were very hot to trot for this question, like one of Gonzo's chickens. What do you think?
I just like the Muppets, man.
Who doesn't like the Muppets?
I think Hugo is our Kermit. He's definitely the leader of the bunch. And he's got that flailing arms up in the air, yay, kind of thing.
You don't think Holtby is Kermit?
No, I don't.
Flailing around?
No, Kermit is the rock of the Muppets.
Oh, all right. Well,
he's not a rock. Sandro as Animal, I think, is a no-brainer. Yeah, I don't know anything else. That's all I got for now.
I think Kabul is what's the Professor Muppet's name?
Bunsen Honeydew.
Bunsen Honeydew, and I think Jan Vertonghen is his able sidekick Beaker.
I like that.
I think Adebayor is. Is the band leader. What's his name? I'm forgetting all the Muppets names tonight.
Dr. Teeth?
Muppet. Yes, Dr. I think he's Teeth. Dr. Teeth. I think Adebayor is Dr. Teeth.
I think Adebayor is Sweetums.
The only one that I could really come up with on short notice is that I'm really feeling a connection between Pochettino and Pepe the King Prawn, but that's just me.
I think that's a fair shout. I think Holtby is Miss Piggy.
The thing I that's striking me is that Eric Lamella looks like a Muppet.
He does look like a Muppet. He might be Beaker, actually. He might
be. I'm not sure. I think he actually is a Muppet. Eric Lamella, the Muppet. That is his Muppet name.
Wow. That's some deep stuff. No, he's the what was the name of the protagonist from the Muppet movie? Simon? He kind of looks like him.
Walter?
That's it. I think he kind of looks like Walter.
Do we have a Gonzo?
No, who is? Oh no, that's Holtby.
Yeah,
that's Holtby. That's Holtby. Who's Miss Piggy then?
I know, but for Kabul, I was also thinking of that giant 8-foot tall Muppet that kind of romps around throughout the entire original Muppet movie, you know, the very first one.
Sweetums.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me of Sweetums. I like Kabul in that role.
I like Adebayor as Sweetums, but hey.
All right. Well, I'm sure everyone's enjoying Wheeler Dealer Muppet.
Ooh, you know what? Soldado kind of looks like Gonzo.
Yeah, but he doesn't act like Gonzo.
Yeah, you just that's very nosist of you, Ben.
Maybe it is, but I've got my own nose issues, so it's fine.
Okay, so Danielle DeRoss has an important question. How much of a jerk was that guy Lennon's eyebrow? Did you guys hate the Roosevelts too? How glad are you that they're gone? So glad. Those guys were dicks.
You know what? The worst guy that I'm so glad is gone is that Menno Daddy guy. Boy, he just sucked.
Yeah, all he did was talk about butter.
MC of A? I don't even know what that means, but that guy was terrible.
I think it means like four Z's in a row, like the sleeping sound effect. All he did was write about numbers. So boring. So boring. Let's get to some actual questions.
No, let's go further up our own asses.
Further up our own asses? I think that's a good thing. Let's do that because we want to keep this as wide open and accessible as possible.
People really like inside baseball. It's cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Especially the British. They love inside baseball. Demon Deacon asks, if you were Holtby's agent, how would you advise him vis-a-vis a move to Hamburg versus staying an undefined role at Spurs? I know everyone here thinks I'm going to take a chance to bag on Holtby, and LOL, Holtby sucks, and I think it'd be funny if he followed Raphael Vandervaart's path. I mean, he's already sleeping with women other than his significant other, so he's halfway there.
Is he?
Was he nailing a flight attendant while he was at Fulham or something? I remember seeing that in the tabloids. Anyway.
man, for someone who hates Holtby, you are all of his shit.
Well, I have the whole clipboard of Holtby and Tom Carroll up in my house so I can plot their demise. Now, honestly, I know everyone's expecting me to bag on Holtby more here than I already have. I think this is something that we don't really know the answer to. It probably depends on how Pochettino regards Holtby. Clearly, he's not in his starting 11 or starting 14 or whatever. If he's really, like, going to ride that...
You can only start 11, Greg.
Well, I mean, his starting, like...
You don't get to start 14.
Shut up. If he's
Boy, clearly, that's how we should beat Liverpool.
That's exactly how we should beat Liverpool. If he's not... He's clearly not in Pochettino's sort of, like, either starting 11 or, like, next couple guys that he'll rotate in the squad. Like...
He came off the bench against West Ham. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but he also, like, didn't start or get any minutes against QPR. You know, he didn't get much. Did he get any time against in the Europa League?
Yes.
Did he start that game?
I think yes. He started that game.
Whatever.
Didn't he play 90?
Yes.
Did he? Oh, well, he was anonymous. My point is, I think this relies on Holtby knows what his relationship with Pochettino is at this point. You know, if he's only going to get starts against garbage Europa League teams and substitutions, that's not enough for Holtby. If Holtby wants to be getting 90 every week, then he probably should go to Hamburg.
Holtby should not go to Hamburg on any account. Hamburg got pseudo-relegated last
year. No, you're right.
They got relegated last year and only didn't get relegated because German football has a playoff for the third relegated team versus the third promoted team that Hamburg happened to win. So, A, Hamburg sucks. And there's still a chance of them getting relegated again next year, which is not going to be good for Holtby's future career.
Well, Holtby wants 90 every week. I
think Holtby is the perfect utility man for this team. I mean, we have nobody else who could spell Eriksen or Lamella besides Holtby. There's nobody else who can really spell Benteleb in midfield and give that same passing ability. I hope he's going to get plenty of minutes this season. And it might not be as the first-choice guy, but, I mean, he's going to play.
So I think, all joking aside, I think it comes down to, is Holtby fine being sort of like, you know, the Swiss Army knife who comes off the bench. Like, I just don't think – I don't see him breaking the starting 11 this year, at least barring injury.
Well, I mean,
Dustin, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say. Well, he's making all the right noises right now. He doesn't seem to be clamoring to get away from Tottenham at all.
So, I think this comes down to, if he knows that Pochettino rates like five players above him, then he'll go, or he'll try to go. But if he thinks he's got a shot at getting minutes, I think you're right, Ben. Like, Hamburg's awful. He'll probably leave and Raphael Vandervaart might sleep with his girlfriend. So,
I mean, I think it's important that we don't let Holtby go, honestly. Like, all jokes aside and all hyperbole aside, you know, I think depth is hugely important. It's going to be hugely important this year. I mean, we've already seen, you know, what's happening to Arsenal as injuries start to take down their thin squad. You know, even Everton, when Lukaku had to go off because he was mildly injured, you know, there's just nobody to fill that hole. Holtby is a big part of our depth, and I think we can't let that go because I don't think we have anybody who does what he does and does what our starting 11 guys do in a way that we can afford their injury without Holtby.
Yeah, I think, you know, like when we got Holtby, he was sold to us by fans, by journalists, as like the next big thing. And it just sort of drives me nuts that he's, A, been unable to capitalize on that, and B, our fans still seem to think he should be starting, which I don't think he's justified that at all. If he's willing to do that utility role, I think he's great in that role. I'm skeptical he's ready to accept that. At least in the short term. I understand he'll want to be starting long term, but I'm skeptical he's willing to accept that role in the short term.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
I guess we will. Let's see. What's our next question? Reno Wallabout asks us to settle the Pochettino nickname debate once and for all.
So I was heavily Team Mopo to start the season, but I'm all aboard the Poche train.
Poach? That's so dumb. Poach.
I hate Poach.
Poach.
Poach is awkward and weird.
You can make great stupid jokes about poaching goals and stuff.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Those are stupid jokes. So, but I'm Team Poche. I think that he is, you know, that apparently is his nickname in Argentina. And two, one of the things I love about football, and especially about the sort of the tradition of Central and Southern European football that then migrated to South America, is that deep entanglement with politics, even when it doesn't make any damn sense. And Pochettino is apparently, you know, a man of the left. There is a sort of a connection with sort of Shea imagery, so the Poche kind of connects with that.
There's only a connection with Shea imagery because of our own wonderful Earl of Shoup, Ohio Spurs, Spurs, I don't know what that is, but, you know, there's only...
But that's why he was asked to make that image in the first place.
Oh, my God. Anyway, Poche just has a role off the tongue.
Bielsa has that history. Sampaoli has that history. There's this whole Bielsa leftist thing. I like making that connection, regardless of how you feel about the politics. I like that that's sort of part of what football is.
Yes. I just don't think it rolls off the tongue.
Poche sounds so much better than Poach. Poach is, like, clipped and awkward, and it rips it of all of that Latin
Poche
influence.
Poche sounds like you forgot Poche. To finish the word. Like,
no, Poach sounds like you forgot to finish
no,
the word.
Poche
it's Poche.
Like, Poche.
He's fucking,
hey,
he's
Gabagool,
from Argentina. Words end in vowels down there.
Poche is sounds like lazy Spanish, which is perfect.
You're all the worst. Okay, let's just go with Mopo.
No. I'm totally Team Poche, and I think I want
yes,
Mopo to die a very fast and very painful death.
Mopo, Mopo, Mopo. Come on, Mopo. All right.
No, it's just you, man.
All right, we have a final question here. Or not the final, but next to the final question from Amadeus Spuds. If, and this is a big if, we beat Liverpool this weekend, how should the club and its fans reevaluate our goals for the season? We are already 3 points better off from last season beating West Ham. We beat Liverpool. We'll be 3 points better off from that. I'm sick of us, the fans, being satisfied with sixth. I'll get us started on this. I think, obviously, if we beat Liverpool, it'll be encouraging no matter how Liverpool end up being this year. After last year, it'll just feel nice. I think we should cool our jets. I don't think we should get carried away. People were talking about a title challenge for Spurs, probably myself included, until about October last year, because we kept hanging around the top of the table. We should take it as a positive. We should take it as the fact that maybe we have a team that knows what the hell it's doing this year. And I think we should keep our eye on the top four, given that you know, United's looking a lot weaker than we all anticipated. Liverpool would certainly be weaker than maybe ideally they would have thought. Arsenal haven't clicked into gear yet. We should maybe, like, keep our eye on that prize, but we shouldn't get carried away. We should take it, to use the old cliche, one game at a time, I think. Michael.
Yeah, I think that, you know, at this, you know, this question just makes me sort of want to crawl up into a little ball. I think that wondering about how fans ought to react to something that fans right at this moment are desperately hoping will happen.
Yeah,
I don't really see the logic to it. I think we should react to if we beat Liverpool, I think we should react to it by being really, really happy because we beat Liverpool. And right now, I don't think we're going to.
You're right.
That's fantastic.
Let's leave it to other people in the Spurs internet world to tell fans how they should react, even though I just did that a minute ago. Ben, how about you? What do you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the goal of this season is top four. That's the goal of every season, you know, until we are good enough to challenge for the title every year, which we're not. So top four is where we should be setting our sights. If we beat Liverpool, yeah, we can start to hope that maybe we're closer to that than we thought we were at the beginning of the season. But I think if we end up finishing sixth because Liverpool actually, besides losing to us, are still a really fucking good team, and Balotelli has a really good season, and Manchester United just signed Angel Di Maria, and they signed Arturo Vidal, and, you know, fix a lot of the problems that's plagued them after only two games. You know, six is okay. Like, we're facing a very uphill battle here. And so to expect more than that, I think, is an unrealistic... I mean, ever, frankly, to expect that Spurs should finish fourth with the sixth best finances in England is just completely naive about how football works. You know,
profit before glory, mate.
Yeah, I mean, the richest teams win things. That's how it works. Like, the goal is to punch above, you know, your financial position, which is why we're shooting for fourth. But the reality is, we're the sixth biggest team. So if we finish sixth, that's probably where we belong, you know, barring catastrophes from other clubs. And if those happen, yeah, we should be able to capitalize on it, hopefully, if Pochettino's doing his job. But barring those kind of catastrophes in the clubs, you know, financially above us, it's not an expectation that we should allow ourselves to have, because it only leads to stupid disappointment and misguided disappointment.
And bitter recriminations, otherwise known as the last 3 years of Tottenham Hotspur. Dustin, any other thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, without calling out the person who asked the question too much, I there is a curious subset of fandom that really bothers me. It's if you ever listen to the radio call-in show 606 on BBC Five Live, these are the kind of people you hear an awful lot. The kind of fan who will set their club up for insane expectations every single year, and then find reasons to get upset no matter what happens. Now, I'm not saying that the person who asked this falls in that category by any means, but, you know, as a sports fan, you can find lots of reasons to be unhappy. And I have learned the hard way through my own sports fandom that it's just not worth it. So I like to set realistic goals for the sports teams I have no direct influence over whatsoever. And which is why I'm thinking that, you know, sixth place is par for our club, and we should be, we're in a situation where we could be vastly improved from last year and still not finish in the top four, and that's okay. But to really kind of assign some kind of a value judgment on, because we're not ambitious enough, or we're not, spending enough money, or whatever the rubric happens to be, it sets the stage for just always ending up disappointed and angry and bitter about your sports team. And that's not why I watch sports. I watch sports because, you know, I'm a Spurs fan because I like to get my heart ripped out of my chest every season. But I watch sports in general because I like them.
And I like to be happy in the happy moments and to commiserate with my fellow sports fans in the not so happy moments. So, you know, lighten up is what I'm saying.
So,
amen. Amen.
Well said. Well said. So final question. This comes from Twitter. @randomtangent asks, if Holtby does leave this transfer window, who will Skip Jack mercilessly hate on then? Ben.
Oh, my God. You're so up your own ass, aren't you?
I know the answer to that.
Non-Tom Carroll division.
Oh, speaking of Tom Carroll, 90 minutes in the cup, supposedly had a very good game. Swans fans are very pleased with his performance and think they've got a real player on their hands.
More so like than English QPR models. Fans ever were.
It's just QPR fans are idiots, and they support a team who plays football like QPR. As we just saw this weekend.
So we sell Holtby. Who is number one on Skipjack's hate list?
I mean, you turning on Harry Kane is inevitable at this point.
He's tall for a blonde-haired player, though. I tend to turn on the small blonde-haired player.
Greg, why do you hate me? I'm trying so hard to be good at football.
You catch too many flies, Harry. You catch too many flies. It's all about those poor, defenseless creatures.
And you know,
God made me this way.
And see, and I would go with Andros Townsend. Actually,
that's a safe shot, especially if his dad doesn't shut up on Twitter.
Also, because we're playing a Cypriot team, and he's half Cypriot, and so naturally, you can. If we happen to lose by some stretch of the imagination, you can just naturally switch your hatred of Cypriot teams over directly to Andros Townsend. It seems like a good fit.
That's a fair shout. I think that's a good idea. Michael, do you have any? Do you still think Harry Kane?
Yeah, I mean, we all love him, and it's tremendously fun to place our hopes and dreams upon him, and you want to crush those.
The difference
is, I think the balance is perfect.
See, here's why I think Andros is perfect. I'll tell you why. Because the reason I hate Harry Kane and Tom Carroll is everyone...
he hates Harry Kane, you
no, Harry Kane. The reason I hate Tom Carroll and Lewis Holtby, sorry.
Nope, Freudian
slip. I get the blonde hair player is confused. The reason they – I don't hate them, but the reason they drive me a little bit mental is because all these fans big up these two guys who really haven't done all that much. And Harry Kane has actually had productive matches at a senior level, like, and shown us things in games against real teams. So that is why I don't think I'll turn on Harry Kane. I think – but Andros Townsend is a guy who's had, like, maybe 30 good minutes at Spurs and, like, developed a reputation, you know, not commiserate with that. And I think this is a fair shot. I think that's very astute.
Yeah, he's getting sold to Southampton.
Yeah, I think definitely. Especially with all that crap that his dad's putting out on. Like, every time an article comes out about that, he writes, like, interesting reading. It's like, that's not helpful. Well, unless we have anything else, we got a big game against Liverpool this weekend, which I am going to go curl up in a ball and start drinking whiskey for. Not Lennon's Eyebrow... For Uncle Menno and for Michael Cayley, I am Skip Jack. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Podcast. Come on, you Spurs. I don't want